morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have updates on coronavirus, including how campgrounds are responding to the pandemic and the challenges remote learning presents for families of students with special needs. It's Monday, March 30th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl.
With Montana News, I'm Corin Cates-Carney.
And I'm Nikki Ouellette. As of Sunday evening, Montana is reporting more than 160 known cases of the COVID-19 illness caused by the novel coronavirus. Two more Montanans have died. The Cutbank Pioneer Press reports a woman from Toole County died Saturday, and the Madison County Health Department notified the governor's office of another last night.
Gallatin and Yellowstone counties are seeing the bulk of cases, and health officials in both counties say the virus is spreading through the community. And Yellowstone County also learned late last week that a second guard at the county detention center has tested positive for the illness.
Yes, this is the state's largest jail. It's built for 434 inmates, but it sometimes holds as many as 530 people at a time. The first guard to test positive there posted on social media that he picked it up out of state and had, quote, little if no close contact, end quote, with inmates before he went home sick. And the new case, her last shift was on March 19th, and there's not much more information released about that case because of privacy concerns.
So if there are hundreds of people in this detention center, Nikki, what are officials in Yellowstone County doing to keep inmates safe?
So jails and prisons around the state have been changing some aspects of how the day-to-day grind of the legal system works. I spoke with Seaborn Larson. He's a cops and courts reporter at the Missoulian, and he's been covering how the legal system is reacting to COVID-19 so that they can continue to offer justice but also keep people safe. Seaborn, thanks so much for sharing your reporting with us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
So in a memo recently, Montana Supreme Court Chief Justice Mike McGrath asked city and county judges to review their jail rosters and release as many prisoners as they are able to, especially for nonviolent offenders. Are local judges doing that?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a combined effort between defense attorneys, prosecutors, and judges, and it's kind of been going in a sort of a patchwork system across the state. Well, so in some counties, we're seeing judges who are willing to look at a list that has been kind of compiled by defense attorneys and prosecutors to say, like, these people are not a risk to the community, or maybe these people have heightened vulnerability to the COVID virus. And so in some places, they're going to let people out by just a whole list. And other places, it's moving more on a case-by-case basis. Some of the top officials at the State Office of the Public Defender has said they're not really preferential to one route or the other, but anything to try to get more people out as soon as they can.
Gotcha. And what about at state prisons? What's coming down from the State Department of Corrections?
So the State Department of Corrections has told me this last week that they are, like most other agencies, really upping the cleaning procedures around facilities. They're also trying to limit any movement of inmates between counties or between state facilities. And so they are going to county jails and trying to negotiate rates to pay them to hold inmates that would have been transferred to state facilities anyway. Speaking with the parole board this week, they've said they are going to be reviewing any possible parolees who are coming up between now and the end of the year to see who might be more vulnerable to the COVID virus and who they can fast track through that process as a response to the outbreak.
Gotcha. So why is there so much attention paid to this particular set of Montanans being detained in prisons or jails?
I think a lot of organizations have been really vocal about this because of their concerns for how quickly a virus like this could spread through a facility. Like, we don't have the ability to isolate people in prisons in a way that you and I are able to isolate ourselves in, like, our own homes. And so the sanitation is one thing that prison officials can address, but, you know, there's no way to separate people into airtight pods where they're not going to be breathing the same air or being within that 6-foot distance. And so the amount of concern here has been really vocal from a bunch of groups like the Montana Innocence Project, ACLU of Montana, several domestic violence coalitions have all signed on to letters directed to the governor to exercise his clemency powers, actually, and just release people who might be more vulnerable to the COVID virus.
You know, these contagious illnesses can travel quickly through the prison population itself, but then also there's a chance that it could be transferred to a guard or someone and then brought back into the community. Thinking of other kind of law enforcement officials who might be on the front lines, are they changing any of their policies to limit the spread of the coronavirus?
Yeah, we've seen law enforcement agencies across the state, local ones, who are kind of scaling back their in-person responses to calls for service. So if it's not an emergency or an ongoing threat to somebody, then a lot of times they're just taking reports over the phone rather than arriving on scene to meet with people. And so a lot of law enforcement agencies are kind of finding ways to get creative during this time. But for all emergency or violent calls, that it definitely seems like they're still out on patrol looking for those sorts of things.
I read a story out of South Dakota recently that 8 women who were at the state prison escaped after one of their fellow detainees tested positive for the COVID-19 illness. These women were serving time for stuff like drugs, DUI, simple assault, second-degree robbery, and they face another 5 years in prison for their escape. It's sort of an extraordinary story, but it illustrates the real fear of infection. Are we seeing anything like this happening here in Montana?
Yeah, I think sort of at the street level, there's been at least one arrest in Missoula where a woman tried to tell officers that she had tested positive for the virus and that she shouldn't be arrested or they shouldn't come near her because of that. In that case, officers were able to call the hospital where she said she had been tested and found that that wasn't true. There's also the former Crow tribal chairman who had asked for a lighter sentence because he had shared concerns about contracting the COVID virus while in prison. And so I don't know how that's working out for an actual legal defense at that level, but we're definitely seeing it play a role in certain proceedings.
And it sounds like the court system is still functioning, and maybe this is an obvious question, but why wouldn't officials just kind of shut that down just to limit spread even further?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole court system has pretty much from the outset of COVID's arrival in Montana been told to keep moving forward by the Supreme Court. It was one of the first memos that Chief Justice Mike McGrath issued about 2 weeks ago. But I mean, when people are arrested, the part of, you know, your rights is to have a hearing within 24 hours of that arrest. So prosecutors and law enforcement can present evidence as to why you're there. So if those aren't in place, if those hearings don't happen, then people in theory could be arrested with no probable cause. And so it's important to keep those rights in place, because if we don't have them during a pandemic, then what are they good for?
You know, a lot of the changes that you just outlined, earlier release or, you know, faster trial dates, those are things that social justice groups have been pushing for even before the onset of the coronavirus. Is it possible that any of these new policies will stay in place after the pandemic is over?
I've been wondering about that as well. I mean, a lot of what certain groups are pushing doesn't sound any different than what they were pushing for in like the 2019 legislature, right? And so I asked one justice of the peace, Landy Holloway, here in Missoula County, about her thoughts about that and whether or not this is a good time for people to get used to these changes, maybe for the long term. And she told me that, you know, there is a time and place to install these measures for good. But right now, these are measures that are being made and agreed to totally upon the coronavirus outbreak. And so I think that might create some room for better understanding as to how these policies play out once they're in place. But in terms of them continuing after the pandemic is yet to be seen.
Seaborn, thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Big thanks there to Seaborn Larson, the cops and courts reporter for the Missoulian. And thanks, Nikki, for talking to him.
So after Seaborn and I spoke on Friday, Phoebe Tollefson, who's the cops and courts reporter for the Billings Gazette, was writing about how the Yellowstone County Detention Center specifically is setting up isolation units in case there is a positive test.
And what would happen if a inmate was infected while incarcerated and then was released?
The sheriff's office says if there is a viral outbreak, they plan to petition the Yellowstone County Board of Commissioners so they can buy more GPS monitoring devices. The idea there is that, you know, if someone tests positive but they're released, they'd be able to track them down. Or say someone is released and then their cellmate tests positive, they'd be able to track down that released inmate to do contact tracing and make sure they're not sick. And Yellowstone County has lowered its inmate count from 500 to 404 as of Friday.
And how are they going about reducing their headcount?
The Billings Gazette reports that patrol officers are making fewer bookings. They're issuing notices to appear for non-dangerous people instead. And judges are resolving more cases. They're dismissing them or sentencing people straight to programming. Jury trials are suspended at this time, so judges actually have more time to resolve those criminal cases. And it's not just like jails are throwing open the doors. Each person is being considered individually.
So we're about 2.5 weeks into the first COVID-19 case being reported in Montana. It sounds like already some significant changes in the justice system.
Indeed. And we'll be back tomorrow with changes in other aspects of our society. Thanks, Corin.
Thank you, Nikki.
Two more people in Montana have died of coronavirus-related illness, according to health officials and the Pioneer Press in Cutbank. Madison County health officials said in a statement that a county resident died Saturday evening. The statement did not identify the person or provide any additional details. "We hope that this is the last life that will be lost against this invisible enemy," the statement said. The governor's coronavirus task force confirmed the death, according to a statement from Governor Steve Bullock's office. The Pioneer Press reported Sunday a patient in Toole County died over the weekend as a result of the virus. On Thursday, a retired high school teacher who lived in Lincoln County named Jim Tomlin died 4 days after showing symptoms. As of Sunday evening, 161 people have tested positive out of 4,069 completed tests in Montana. For most people, the coronavirus causes mild or moderate symptoms. For some, especially older adults and people with existing health problems, it can cause more severe illness. Montana's national forests are shutting down developed recreation sites in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. As Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports, visitors can still recreate on most of those federal lands, but should not expect any amenities.
Throw a dart at a map of Montana's national forests and the story's pretty much the same. Developed recreational facilities are now closed to the public until further notice. Those closures include all developed campgrounds, day-use sites, lookouts, forest outhouses, and toilets. Forest rental cabins are now closed and unavailable for rent. Those who've already booked cabins will be notified as soon as possible and will get refunds. This is just the latest development surrounding the expanding novel coronavirus pandemic. Forest Service news releases from various forest headquarters in Montana noted these decisions were not taken lightly and made with public health and safety in mind. The closures will not affect forest trails, trailheads, or dispersed camping sites, which for now remain open. Individual forest websites have updated and specific details. Public health officials are encouraging exercise during these stressful times as long as people practice proper social distancing. The public is also asked to recreate responsibly. The Beaverhead Deer Lodge National Forest, for example, discourages the public from high-risk activities such as rock climbing. Forest officials say law enforcement and search and rescue operations may now be limited due to concerns about COVID-19. The closures aren't limited to Montana's federal lands. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks this afternoon announced state parks, fishing access sites, and wildlife management areas are now only open for day use. Overnight camping is not allowed. Campgrounds will be systematically closed, giving current campers 72-hour notice. Group use sites will be closed, including playgrounds, and visitor center closures will be extended through at least April 10th. Bathroom use at many locations will be limited and sites will be regularly patrolled by enforcement staff. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
As Montana schools begin to provide education remotely in order to reduce the spread of coronavirus, parents will be serving as their child's co-teacher at home. For many, that's a large undertaking, but it's even more of a challenge for parents of students with special needs. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports.
7 plus 2. 9. That's right.
Noah is a fifth grader in the West Valley School District, and he's working on some math with his grandma at home because schools in Montana remain closed, at least until April 10th. His mom, Kelly Fisk, explains that Noah has a chromosome disorder.
You know, he has multiple seizures a day. He has severe learning disabilities, low IQ. Just very complicated kid.
Fisk says keeping Noah on track with schoolwork at home can be a struggle in normal times. But now, with him learning full-time at the kitchen table, there's more than just homework to consider. Noah receives specialized curriculum under what's known as an Individualized Education Plan, or IEP, that outlines not only his academic and life skill goals, like learning 100 new words or understanding social boundaries, but the supports that are supposed to get him there.
Yeah, so he receives X amount of minutes of speech and OT, occupational therapy, every week. So they take him out of class and he goes and meets with a specialist. So that will not happen while we're shut down.
To be clear, Fisk says her son's school is trying as best as it can to get creative with services, and she's willing to be flexible. But she doesn't feel prepared to carry out a lot of things outlined in her son's plan.
Even if I could get him to do schoolwork, I'm definitely not qualified as a speech and OT specialist.
For now, schools are outlining the broad strokes of how they will deliver education and other services in plans ordered by Governor Steve Bullock. Those are due by Monday in order to maintain state funding. About a fourth of Montana's 400 school districts have finalized their plans with local school boards and the governor's office. But how services will be delivered to special ed students will have to be done on a case-by-case basis, a charge led by the teams that put together IEPs for students. In the Kalispell School District, Jen Stein is the principal of Edgerton Elementary and also a parent to a special needs child. She says that any drop in behavioral supports, consistent one-on-one instruction, or accommodations for physical disabilities will make it harder to get kids back on track when they return to class, especially for younger, less independent children.
Those are the kids that I am really concerned about as far as not having the schedule, not having all those supports. And really, if that part of their being is struggling, then catching up or coming back to do academics will be even more challenging.
Kalispell Special Education Director Sarah Cole says the district has a little over 700 students with identified disabilities. And she explains the district is trying to deliver as many services as it can online or remotely. But there are limits.
We might have kids on the autism spectrum, students with Down syndrome, students who have pretty significant intellectual impairments who might not be able to sustain attending to direct instruction provided via Google Hangout or on a device.
Cole explains that if students with IEPs can't receive all of their regular services during school closures, their teams will have to assess the situation when school doors are open again.
And so that's the population of students that we're really going to, when school's back in session, do some assessment and then pull those IEP teams together to see if there's any compensatory services that we need to provide.
That's what the U.S. Department of Education is telling districts to do for now. Montana Office of Public Instruction Special Education Director Jennifer Klein says the issue is it's entirely unknown how long school doors will be closed for and just how much flexibility there is in federal law when it comes to not providing certain services under the circumstances. Klein says there's also questions about when and how students should be assessed when they do return to school.
The federal government right now is looking at the law and trying to determine what do they have the ability to give flexibility to districts within the agency itself, the Office of Special Education Programs, or does something need to have actually truly be an act of Congress.
Disability advocates like Disability Rights Montana are watching and working with OPI, but most of all, they're pushing for flexibility with families during this unprecedented time. Fisk says as a parent, she understands school will look different this year and maybe next year as well.
But I think that they'll do what they need to make sure that the kids get caught up. The unknowns are still kind of scary, though. Like, it's just a waiting game, and no one likes a waiting game.
Just how long that waiting game will last, nobody knows. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.